freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello! Let's see. Final hour here. Brock and Salk. 30 minutes from now at 9:30, we're going to talk to Christine Brennan from USA Today and various other outlets as well. Want to get her take on kind of where things go from here after the incredible weekend of women's college sports. And so what is the future of this hold? How did we get here? She's a great voice on that. We've spoken to her before, and she was always one of my favorites when I used to do the network fill-in stuff. So we'll be talking to Christine coming up at 9:30. Brock, before we get to that, on Thursday, it'll be just 2 weeks before the NFL draft, so we are coming down the final stretch of your draft profiles.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
This is Brock Huard's draft profile.
But you want traits? Check. You want a vocal leader? Check.
At the end of the day, you have to say, okay, what's best for the organization?
Can you make people around you better, and can you bring people together?
Every day at 9 a.m. leading up to the draft.
Remember growing up, Salk? In the 80s, the 90s. Remember all the movies with ninjas?
Yeah, ninjas were a big thing.
What happened to all the ninjas?
I don't know. Now we only have pitching ninja.
Yeah. I mean, we had so many ninjas back in the
day. Everybody wanted to play ninja.
When I played Rambo out in the backyard before the Puyallup Fair bulldozed all the woods that we used to play Rambo in and build my zip line, you had to fight some ninjas every once in a while. We had throwing stars we made and everything else. Mm. I'm going to give you a 6'5", 260-pound ninja.
Whoa.
Because those ninjas in those days were not 6'5", 260. But that's what Latu is. That's the closest thing that I can characterize him. He is... Jim Nagy sent some tape out last week. So he's a defensive end, outside edge linebacker from UCLA. So this is my draft profile today. Liatu Latu, UCLA, defensive player of the year in the Pac-12 conference. Jim Nagy, our buddy down there in Mobile, who we had on, I don't know, about a month ago or so before or after the Senior Bowl. And he sent out some tape and he was like, I'm sorry, man, this is Matrix-like stuff. When Dave Wyman will say a bunch of times, man, come on. Like, what do you expect these guys to do? Full speed, contort their body. Now they can't hip tackle. Now they can't land on a quarterback. Now they can't. Well, Liatu Latu is one ninja that could do those things. The way he can contort and change of direction and just get his body in places, Salk, that you're like, well, now you're dead. Oh, no, you're not dead. Now you're still alive, and now you can spin, and now you're going to make a sack, of which he did more than anybody else in all of college football last year. He led the FBS with 21.5 tackles for loss. He was fourth with 13 sacks. Those led to All-American stats. Those led to Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. Throw in two picks, throw in three forced fumbles. The dude is just all over the field. The season before in 2022, well, he had 10.5 sacks. He had three forced fumbles. He was once again an all-conference performer, and he led all of the FBS. It was him and Braylon Trice with 65 pressures in 2022. So that's 23, and that's 22. And if that's all you knew, Liatu Latu would be a top 10 pick. But that's not all the rest of the story.
Okay.
The rest of the story, as I said in Blue 88 today, Salk, are those pieces of information, are the reams of data that we don't have on the outside. He played, actually, for the University of Washington. He was in that recruiting class in 2019 with Rome Odunze and the rest of them. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Liatu Latu was on this team? Maybe the national championship game is different, quite honestly. Maybe the level of defense for the Huskies with Braylon Trice on one side and Latu on the other would have been that much more elite and protected even more of some of the deficiencies they had on that team. But he was a Husky in 2019. He played as a true freshman. In fact, he played in 12 games, made 16 tackles, had a couple tackles for loss. And then I remember this story. I remember sitting there thinking in 2020, where is Liatu Latu? Ooh. Yeah, he's got an injury, and they're trying to figure out whether or not it's a career-ending injury. And in fact, the University of Washington staff, Salk, did not clear him. They felt like whatever was going on and in their MRIs and in their study, that it was too much risk for Liatu Latu, too much risk for the program to put him out on the field and medically retired and didn't play in 20 and didn't play in 21. And then he sat around and probably started to feel really good and started to train and started to get back and started to build up that frame that's, as I said, 6'5", 260 pounds, ran 4.64 at the combine and jumped 32 inches. I mean, freaky special stuff. And he got cleared. And he went to UCLA and put up those prodigious numbers over the last two seasons. There will, I am sure, of 32 NFL teams be teams that look at that MRI the way that the UW doctors did, the way that the UW staff did, the way the UW personnel did, and said, I'm sorry, there's just too much risk here for me to clear you and play you. There will be teams that will do the same and frankly take him off of their draft boards. Mm-hmm. And then there will be teams that put on that tape and go, whoa, positionless. At UCLA, Salk, over the last 2 years with NFL schemes and NFL coordinators, he played the edge. He played the three technique. He moved all over the line of scrimmage and nickel. He dropped into coverage, as I said, with two picks. I mean, he's one of these rare, rare guys that could play anywhere in the front seven. Not Mike or Will, but you put him on any edge or you put him in any nickel situation at 260, he could come in on third downs and go up against some of these guards in this league and absolutely own them and eat them. So he's going to be a first-round pick. Could he be on the board at 16? Probably depends on the run on quarterbacks, receivers, and tackles. He's not the number one end. That's Dallas Turner. He's going to go ahead of him. Right, there could be a corner need for somebody else somewhere else. There could be a, you know, another need, another trade up for a quarterback. If 4 or 5 QBs go, if 4 or 5 tackles go, if all three of those receivers go, you do the math. Sitting there at 16 could be one of the most intriguing prospects in this draft in Liatu Latu.
All right, that is today's draft profile. If he's there, should they take him?
No, I don't think you can. I think you've got to then trade down and hope somebody else so desperately wants him, and you have invested. This then becomes one of those balanced conversations.
So this, right? Even though you love him.
I love this dude. I just don't think you know, you got out of whack, Salk, with receivers. You got out of whack with your safety room. You just kind of got out of whack. You got imbalanced, you know, and I don't care about talent. Oh, yeah, just take the best talent. Well, not when you've taken Derek Hall, Boye Mafe, mm-hmm. Uchenna Nwosu, and you've invested in Dre Jones. Like, no, we have invested so much artillery, and we're going to trust our coaching and our scheme to get the most out of those edge players. But if somebody else wants Liatu Latu because he's that elite of a pass rusher, and that much of a difference maker, then hopefully they can come up and maybe even overpay you in this draft to add the kind of capital you need later in the first and certainly through the second round.
He sounds like a pretty unique player. Is there a comp for him?
6'5", 260. I think, honestly, a TJ Watt would be a comp. Hmm. I mean, you're talking about that kind of athleticism.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of versatility, that kind of movement, that kind of just matrixy, ninja, just, man, unique. You know who was like that was Walter Jones. Mm. And I remember talking to Tobeck and Todd Weiner and my lineman buddies. Like, I mean, the thing about Walt is it's kind of the antithesis of the Mariners defense. You know, like the Mariners defense right now, third and first, left, some of these positions, like they've got to take the right line. They've got to be in the right spot, right? They've got to have the right body positioning to make the right kind of play. Walter Jones could get embarrassed. Like, he could get beat off the jump. And he could be like in this most compromised position. And then in the blink of an eye, it's 6'5", 330. You're like, whoa, how did the dancing bear just, he's like hopping on one foot. He spun around and then he could get right back into position, in an athletic position and posture where he compensates.
People who just have that natural ability and that natural balance always amaze me. They just always land on their feet.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of like guys that bridge jump like Justin Barnes or get on his motorcycle and do all them flips on that motorcycle.
Just land, like, tires down.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you constantly never get hurt, Justin?
Until he did get hurt. Yeah.
Never hurt.
Yeah. Until he was hurt.
I didn't spend like 16 years in a row with some form of a cast at all.
Who are the best Mariners defenders in that way? Like, who are those guys over the years that may take the first wrong step or, you know, may just kind of get out of position, but it just didn't matter because there's just like
this. I don't know that you can do that very often in baseball. I can't really think of people like that. Yeah, I mean, I think what makes them great defenders is that they don't do that.
That instinct and that first step and the fundamentals to do it right all the time.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, when you're going up against another human and they can beat you and they can manipulate you and they can out-leverage you, your ability to then just leverage right back, that's what this guy has. And it's unique and it's different. And
ninjas, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I miss the ninjas.
Remember, Hills Ninja? What was the name of that game? Ninja Gaiden? G-A-I-D-E-N? Do you remember that?
It was like a
Nintendo game. Maybe it was Gaiden? I don't know how it was pronounced.
G-A-I-D-E-N?
Yeah. Ninja Gaiden?
Have you ever ranked ninjas?
There was no internet then, so we didn't know how to pronounce anything. We just had to guess.
Ever ranked ninjas?
No.
Maybe tomorrow.
So. Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Enough. Mm-hmm. Fruit Ninja?
Oh, we're going to go down that
road. I understand where you're going.
We're going down that road or not. All right, coming up in 20 minutes, we'll talk to Christine Brennan. Before we do it, let's give you everything you need to know next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it was not a great weekend for the Mariners, certainly. In fact, it just felt like a lot more of what we've already seen. Lousy offense, pitching that when it's great has been great, and when it's bad has been terrible and has really cost them. Defense that has been problematic and really exacerbated a lot of their problems that they've had. And you put it all together and didn't go very well. Scott here focused on the offense.
We were in between. I thought, you know, Layden, he can do that to you. Peralta, especially with two strikes, he will run the fastball up there 96, 97, and he'll slow you down early in the count. We're not clicking on all cylinders yet. I know that. Really happy with the way we came back in this ball game tonight. That's what I want us to take out of it, because that's how we can play.
That was Friday. Then Saturday, they got a win. Bryce Miller was great. Honestly, he really was. And probably most important for him, Brock, that splitter was getting lefties out.
That was my goal this offseason, you know, find a way to attack lefties. And I'm happy with where we're at.
Yeah, so you start feeling good. Okay, win the series, back to 500, off you go. And then you get your doors blown off yesterday. And for the second time in a week, Josh Rojas is on the mound. Breaking news, Josh Rojas has changed his profile pic.
Yeah?
He's now pitching in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's pitched in 20% of the games this year.
It's amazing.
Now, let's really hope that doesn't continue, because if that continues, we've got a real problem, Houston. This is not going to work out. Hopefully, the change of scenery will be good. They're going into a building in Toronto tonight where these guys have hit, where they have had big moments, where Julio and Cal and JP, I mean, yeah, you start to kind of pick it apart and you start to nitpick a little bit and say, hey, man, what's the biggest challenge? What's the biggest concern? What's the thing moving forward? Man, just the top of the lineup. Just set the table a little bit. Rojas is actually hitting. Haniger is actually hitting. Just set the table a little bit more for those guys. Would sure like to see JP, Julio, Polanco, those guys at the top, get it going and just go win this series. Mm-hmm. Go win this series. You come home, you're 6-7. You're right there in the mix here in obviously early in April.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We're going to talk more about this with Christine Brennan coming up in 10 minutes, but it was a spectacular last few weeks for women's college hoops. I mean, in women's sports in general and for sports in general. I just can't tell you how much I enjoyed watching, first of all, the Iowa story, which captivated my family, certainly, but also not just them. Watching UConn, watching USC, watching South Carolina, obviously, who ended up winning the title yesterday, watching LSU, watching UCLA. All those teams are fun to watch.
Yes.
And, you know, of all of the observations I've had, the big one for me is it felt the most like the way basketball used to feel. Mm-hmm. When I really did, growing up, I loved basketball equally, if not more, than all of the other sports. It was the one I played the most. I loved the NBA growing up. And over the years, I don't like the style of play. I've given it up. College held on for longer, and then eventually their style of play, I'm not interested in
anymore. Analytics, man. The data.
I know.
The data's really hurt that sport. We talked about it in baseball and the challenge of it, and it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do, to dunk and shoot threes.
It's made it so
challenging. Man, is it hard to watch.
And then in college, like the men's college, like the guys leave after 1 year. You don't know who's where. Everyone's moving around. Well, we got to know Caitlin Clark in Iowa last year. We got to know LSU last year. We got to know some of these South Carolina girls last year. And then to see them all back on the same stage battling again, it just made it more fun.
You know what it is? You know what? I mean, it's simple. The ball moves. Kind of like baseball. The ball is put in play. You know, when it's just a stagnant sport, man, it is nowhere near as much fun. The greatest, you know, show that you loved, the big show that you loved watching in the 80s, man. You were a Boston kid wearing
my Laker gear.
Wearing Lakers Converse out there in Boston.
Wearing my purple and gold.
Because you're annoying and you just don't care about that, you know?
But
you
love Magic.
That's right. You love the Lake Show, man. And what did Lake Show do? What did Magic do? Eyes up all the time. That ball is moving to Worthy. That ball is moving to Cooper. That ball is moving to Jabbar. That ball is on the move. And it was on the move. In South Carolina, man, once they started to make shots early, because if you remember, they played last year. Iowa beat them in the semifinal. South Carolina, in some ways, was more talented than, you know, compared to Iowa last year with their personnel. They just couldn't make a shot.
Right.
So they just packed the lane and dared them to shoot, and they just could not shoot. Not the case yesterday, man. Inside, outside, shot it well. undefeated season for those Gamecocks.
And in the meantime, I know you're not supposed to just shoot jump shots, but after watching for a little while, I was like, Iowa can't. They have to stay out of the paint.
Yes.
Just stop even going in there. You have no chance. You're getting swatted every time. Yeah. Just hope more jump
shots
go in.
It's like you versus Dan Gadzurek back in the day.
Just don't have a chance inside. You're going to have to hit the step back, Jay.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Ben will play tonight, Purdue and UConn in the finals there. And then we got a couple 30 visits for the Seahawks. Aaron Wilson reporting Bo Nix was in this weekend, the quarterback from Oregon, and that Penn State DN Chop Robinson is going to be here as well. I'm going to guess, based on your thoughts on Latu, that Chop Robinson doesn't really make too much sense for them either.
Yeah, now he'd be a little later in the first, and maybe a guy because of injury history as well that falls into the second. I asked the hitman yesterday, our esteemed correspondent and on-air talent at times, Brady Henderson, hey, have you started to curate these top 30 lists? He said, be careful. They're not the top 30. They're 30 visits, number one, like he reminded you on Friday. Number two, sometimes agents will like to say this is a visit when it's not really a visit.
Oh, it's just like a talk.
Yes.
Just like a conversation.
So you got to cut through a little bit. You got to be a little careful, and we are right in the midst. You know what we're in, Saul?
Where?
Not only are the azaleas in full bloom.
Sure.
We are in lion season. It is time of deception and red herrings and lying and everything that goes into the final 2 weeks of this draft as people try to leverage their situations and manipulate their situations the best they can before draft day in, about 15 days.
All right, there you go. That's
actually 17 days.
Everything you need to know, quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk show.
Big day today, by the way.
Why?
April's a big March and April, big day for this show, for the four of us.
Yeah, we were here at 6 talking about it.
I know. I understand. I mean, you were. I'm just saying that on one Monday is a birthday, on the following Monday is a birthday. What day does yours fall on this year? Do you know yet?
Wednesday?
Sunday?
Mine's on a Sunday?
How did you get that far off?
I don't know. Sunday? Wednesday?
Big one for you, right? Middle age.
Me? Uh-huh. 46 is a big one?
Yeah. I mean, clearly past 45, so now you're clearly middle-aged.
Let's talk more about Justin. Today's Justin's birthday.
Today's Felix Hernandez's birthday.
Yes. Well, that's why we were talking about his tattoo earlier and how it resembled the shirt you wanted me to wear the other day.
The fallopian tube.
All right. Coming up next, Christine Brennan's going to join us, a longtime columnist with USA Today and a perfect person to discuss what we all got a chance to see this weekend. The unbelievable ratings. Where does it go from here? We'll get some thoughts from her next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It's been the story here for the last, certainly for the last week. And it came to an end last night in some ways. In other ways, I think the story is just beginning. And that is obviously what we saw with not just Caitlin Clark, but the entirety of the women's tournament. So much fun. And we spent a lot of time on it last week. Christine Brennan, longtime columnist at USA Today. She also does work at CNN and ABC News. And I used to have Christine on all the time, Brock, back in the day when I was doing the national stuff for ESPN. And she's awesome and delightful. And she takes a few minutes to join us now. Hi, Christine. Christine, how are you?
Well, Mike and Brock, great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
How important was this? Was this a sea change moment here over the course of the last few weeks?
Without a doubt. You know, we've been watching this happen in our neighborhoods. The girl next door, we watch run to her soccer game or come back home after a volleyball match or basketball game or softball, whatever. And our granddaughters and our daughters and our nieces, we've been seeing this happen. Kind of happening under our noses, the Caitlin Clarks of the world, of the country, all over the place, right? And we've been seeing growth in women's college sports and professional sports. And this explosion, as I said, has been right under our noses. And boom, there it is. No surprise to me, it's 25 years after the 1999 Women's World Cup soccer team. To me, Caitlin Clark is the individualized version of that team. We simply couldn't take our eyes off of her, and I was a witness to that. I live in D.C., and our whole family, we bought like 10 tickets, no press pass, bought tickets to the Maryland-Iowa game early February. I wanted to experience it with the fans, just go and watch. And I wrote about it a week later or so, but it was unbelievable. And when she pulls up and hits that first logo three, there's like 18,000, 19,000 people. Maryland has one of the biggest basketball arenas in the Big Ten, I think, in the country. It's packed. the seats on the floor were, and the seats in the last row in the rafters, equal, packed. Men, lots of men, women, obviously kids, extraordinary. The student section packed like it, what used to be for a Duke Maryland men's game. And you watch it and you just kind of have to laugh out loud when she hits that first three and then the next three and the next three. It is riveting. It's like watching the diva in the opera. It's like the high wire act in the circus. It's sports and it's more than sports. And so, yes, this is huge and there's no going back. Maybe the ratings won't be quite as good next year, but they're going to be great. And the coverage is going to be there because every newspaper and news organization has to cover. They're not going back now. You know, you've created readers and viewers, especially women, just like Taylor Swift. You want girls and women to be reading and viewing these news organizations, the content, and now we have it. And as I said, it's absolutely terrific. Obviously, I think it's a pretty good thing.
Can you find an individual comp? I like that comp. We were talking about that, and I was at a wedding when the U.S. women, Brandi Chastain hits a goal and, you know, twirls her shirt in the air. And I was at a wedding reception, felt bad for the bride and groom. Like everybody wanted to go watch that thing and not dance and celebrate and everything else. Can you think of an individual kind of story arc that's been close to Caitlin's here over the last couple of years?
Well, make sure to wish them a 25th wedding anniversary on July 10th.
Yes.
Because, yeah, that'd be 25 years for them, wow. Hopefully. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, hope they're still together.
They are. Bless their hearts. They are. And a couple kids.
Oh, yeah. Good to hear. They weathered the storm. Yes. They were there at the beginning. Yeah. I know. I mean, have we had bigger athletes, women athletes? Sure. Serena Williams, right? I mean, the Williams sisters, Venus and Serena, one of the most extraordinary stories in sports. You know, these two sisters just dominating tennis for 20 years, especially Serena, you know, at the last 10 or 15, whatever. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary. But in terms of a surprise, in terms of something kind of organic, that, and also not professional sports, because, of course, Serena and Venus, that was professional tennis, of course. No. I think Caitlin Clark is the biggest thing we have produced in sports other than the sports where women have been able to shine over the decades, which would be Olympic sports, right? So swimmers, mm-hmm. Janet Evans, Katie Ledecky, you know, so many others over the years, you know, tennis, golf, although golf is kind of, you know, up the radar because of all the discrimination against women, is now coming back to haunt them. And, but, you know, and then other Olympic sports, you know, obviously Simone Biles, right? But Caitlin Clark's name right now, you know, going down the street, if we all went out in our homes and watched the eclipse and, you know, asked 10 people, you know, name a female athlete, I think we might get more Caitlin Clarks than Simone Biles or Katie Ledecky's right now.
Mm-hmm. You certainly would in my house, that's for sure. I mean, my daughters are 100% invested in it. One of the things I found interesting, we spent some time on it last week after Caitlin was asked about her legacy, essentially, and whether they needed to win in order for her legacy to be what she wanted it to be. And she spent some time talking about how it was the moments that she would remember more so, and she hoped other people would remember what they did for the sport, et cetera. And I loved that she mentioned watching with both your boys and girls, sons and daughters, because I think it's easy to say, oh, girls should watch this and it's empowering for them. And it's true, not to take anything away from that statement. Sure. But how valuable is it for young boys to watch this as well and normalize the idea that women's sports has this level of value, something that growing up in the 80s, I know that I did not get at all.
Right, right. Well, it's Title IX males, right? We are now creating generations of Title IX males who, whether they're little boys right now wearing those 22 jerseys, when they're 30 or 40 years old, what kind of dads are they going to be? What kind of husbands? What kind of partners, supporters of women in the office, right? The way their dads and grandfathers never would have. I mean, not just sports, but life. Because to me, Caitlin Clark is a sports story, but she's also an American cultural story. And frankly, this is history. And guaranteed, 50 years from now, when kids are studying whatever they're studying in holograms, or I don't know what they're going to be doing, whatever they're doing, Caitlin Clark's name's going to come up, and this 2024 season's going to come up. Absolutely. Whatever we're saying, it's probably not enough about how big a deal this is. Wow. And yes, how smart of her and how great of her, because, you know, she's also, how lucky are we to have this person? I mean, she's 22, and look at how she handles this. Look at how she speaks. Look at the time she spends trying to win games, as Dawn Staley said, the heavy burden and load that she has taken. And you wouldn't even know it, except maybe a one flare-up or two in an early NCAA game at the ref, you know, and her dad saying stop. You know, others, I mean, that's nothing, right, compared to what athletes, how they misbehave and screw up every day. So what a remarkable human being. But to get the boys' part, knowing that those boys are going to be girl dads, and that's why when you think of, like, where we're headed as a nation demographically, women presidents, more than 50 women in the Senate, more than 50% women in the House of Representatives, this is all the exact same conversation, building confident young girls and women who are going to take over the country. And that's what we're seeing, even though right now we're talking about a basketball player.
I think all three of us would be on the side of, I don't want to speak for you, I'll let your answer speak for itself, but I certainly know Salk and I would be on the side of this women's product in basketball. College basketball is more compelling than the men. I guess first and foremost, do you agree with that? And if so, why, from your perspective?
Yeah, I do. And I, you know, I feel pretty good. I'm often on my predictions. I could be wrong. Sometimes shocking.
I can relate to that, Christine. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we all know. Everyone assumes like we know. No. We're covering it, and we have a maybe educated opinion. But before the tournament started, I said the women's is going to be bigger than the men's. Now, that wasn't exactly a shocking thing to say, because we already have Caitlin Clark and the incredible TV ratings already, and the full arenas barnstorming the country like a latter-day Harlem Globetrotter or something, you know, filling up everything and people waiting in lines for hours. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily the biggest, riskiest prediction I've ever had. But, you know, obviously it turned out to be right. We'll see how about the ratings. But even if tonight's men's beats yesterday's women's, that doesn't even matter. I mean, it's the conversation and it's the coverage. And of course, that's primetime tonight versus not primetime yesterday. But network yesterday for the women and cable for the men. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, and why? Why? Well, again, personalities, right? We're a personality-driven society. I mean, we love Tom Brady. We love LeBron. We love Serena. You know, we love Simone or Katie, you know, or whatever. We feel like Tiger, you know, first name basis with these people. And Brock in his day. And, right?
Obviously, and so, for sure, yes.
Well,
yes.
It was B-Rock, but yeah. Yeah.
Yes, Brock in his day.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. I mean, of course, I would have been remiss to not mention that. And so you've got Caitlin, but you also have Juju, you know, and you also have Paige Beckers, and you have, of course, South Carolina's Dawn Staley. What a class act. What a coach. One of the best coaches in the country, male or female. You know, in South Carolina, the dominance. I mean, that Iowa was able to hang with them, being down 5 with 4 minutes to go, was remarkable. That's a sports miracle for Caitlin Clark, just to have that Iowa team be that close, because they're so obviously much shorter and nowhere near as physical and nowhere near the superstars, except for Caitlin, obviously, which is the X factor. But the men, right, it's one and done. And so you're not building any familiarity with the fan base. And so I think all of that plays into it. And I think the women's game has gotten so much better. 30 years ago, it was kind of a mess. I played in high school and intramurals in college at Northwestern. You know, it was not good. Well, we're teaching girls now the fundamentals the way we teach boys. So when you watch Caitlin play, you know, you're not going, oh, that's a woman running. No, that's an athlete running. So this generation has learned, you know, diving for the ball, the stuff we never did. We had two plays in high school, and they get screwed up, and we just, you know, wing it. And you know, it looked like it. And the games were 18 to 16 or something at Ottawa Hills High School in the suburbs of Toledo. And the bottom line is now they're getting the coaching, the money, the care. The parents care about their daughter's sports the way they care about their son's sports. Listeners right now are nodding their heads. Yep, I'm taking my daughter to practice the way I took my son when he was in school. You know, those kinds of things weren't happening 30 years ago. So the women's game is just so much better, and I think it's much more interesting and fun to watch, frankly, than the men's game.
Last thing for you here, Christine. We're talking to Christine Brennan from USA Today. Just quickly, because we only have a moment or two, what's the next chapter in this story, whether it's for Caitlin herself, whether it's for the NCAA women, whether it's for the WNBA? What do you think is the next big chapter, the next big moment in this story?
You know, the really cool thing is that we just said goodbye to Caitlin Clark, right? Goodbye, sad. There she goes, the Instagram post with that she put on there that was quite maudlin with her, you know, jersey and a shoe and, you know, thank you and love to the, you know, everyone in Iowa and around the country. Well, guess what? She'll be back in a week. I don't know that we've ever seen anything like this. And I think I might write about this. The idea of that's over, like the women's soccer, right? That was over. We didn't see them until the Olympics the next year, full year later. Now we're going to see her in a week. The WNBA draft ratings will probably be the highest, well, surely will be the highest they've ever been. And Angel Reese and others as well, Camila Cardoza. But Caitlin's driving that. And then the WNBA, and I know you need to run, but just last little thought, Las Vegas. July game, Indiana Fever at Las Vegas Aces. 12,000-seat arena for Las Vegas. They've already moved the game to a 20,000-seat arena when Indiana plays. And, of course, Caitlin Clark hasn't even been drafted yet by Indiana. There's your Caitlin Clark effect. It's going to happen in the WNBA just like it happened in college. Wow. And the WNBA needs this desperately because they've never had the fan attention and the media attention that they deserve.
Caitlin versus Kelsey Plum going to be pretty fun. Certainly for a lot of people around here who got to know Kelsey and watched her at UW, that'll be...
Caitlin versus Diana Taurasi.
Yeah, that'll be a little fun also.
Yes, it will.
Hey, Christine, thank you so much. It's always good to catch up with you. I'm sorry it's been as long as it's been. Let's make sure we do it again.
I would love to. Call anytime. I'm a huge fan of Seattle. Love it. Love you guys. And thanks so much. And yes, on we go.
Awesome. Thank you. There you go. There's Christine Brennan from USA Today. And just another perspective on this, Brock. It really has been a spectacular story. I've really, really enjoyed this in a way that, look, when you've been in this business for a long time, I still love sports, but there, you know, it becomes a business at times. It becomes work. This in no way felt like work. This was just a fresh,
a spectacle.
New, incredibly fun, entertaining thing to watch.
Yep. Yep. It was a spectacle, as she said. Like the first time you watch Caitlin shoot from 40 feet, like, oh my gosh, that's just right. And when I listened to it's Masters Week, and we'll get in it. When I listened to from Augusta to Bryson DeChambeau in his prime hit a golf ball, 180 miles, like it's just a spectacle. It's just, wow, that is remarkable. And by the way, I kind of like the friction. I know people were killing Diana Taurasi for picking Paige Beckers and everything else ahead of Caitlin, but you need that friction. I kind of like when she's like, you're going to face a bunch of grown women now that do not like her.
For sure.
Right?
Like Kelsey said,
come
it's hard.
At her. Yep. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Did you hear Taurasi with the name, the South Carolina nickname over and over again? That was funny. But, I mean, jeez. Come on. Super just giggling, taking a drink every time. Unbelievable. All right. Great story. Thank you to Christine. Let's finish things up with the greatest part of the show with Ranked.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dornfors' house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
Today we are ranking families. Justin, is this because you're now basically part of G's family?
Yeah, I'm in the inner circle now. Sorry, guys. We're planning all of our next trips already. It's just insane. Yeah.
Golly.
Tough day.
It's his birthday. It's Felix's birthday. Do you also know on this day in history, April 8th, Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's home run record?
Amazing.
It's pretty on big day. Your birthday?
Pretty big day.
Huge
Sheesh.
Day.
Pretty Ooh. Big day.
Crazy. Well, today we're ranking families, like All in the Family.
They are all now great. Those were the days.
You ever watch All in the Family?
Not really.
Really? Oh, it's so funny.
I just watched game tape growing up.
A lot of it. Okay, well, it wasn't on when I was growing up. I appreciate that you think that I'm like 70 years old, but pretty funny show.
Brock, what about this family?
It's a great night to be a Tiger.
Oh,
here
yeah.
with my family.
My family.
Oh, Brian Kelly.
That didn't work out very well.
Still trying to dig himself out of that disaster.
We had a lot of TV shows with family. Family Matters.
Oh, I'm sorry, Steve, but the basement is off limits. That's my den.
But, big guy, I thought you said mi casa su casa.
No, what I said was mess with mi casa and you're out on your ass.
Carl Winslow.
Carl.
Modern Family.
Yeah.
Remember the football player we were talking to that loved Modern Family? Was it Daryl Tapp? Who was like obsessed with Modern Family?
That's a good question.
I think it was.
Good show.
Yeah, it was a good show. I'm not knocking it.
I was just watching it.
Daryl Tapp was super into it. The Partridge Family. You had Family Guy. I'm not playing a Family Guy sound.
not a Family Guy guy.
No. Yeah, the Hogan family or Valerie's family kind of went back and forth. That's where Jason Bateman got his start, of course. Mm-hmm. That was Valerie Bertinelli.
You know I've been listening to a lot is that show he does, the podcast, the Smartless podcast. I actually
Heather likes that one a lot. Yeah. SNL had the Loud family.
Hello, Loud residents.
I'm glad you girls are finally getting dates. You know, you're both good looking, intelligent girls. I don't understand why guys haven't been flocking around the door.
That's good.
You know what Titus had to do last night?
No.
A family tree.
Oh, fun.
It's actually a really cool project.
It's awesome.
I'm going to say it was one of the more enjoyable. You know, you'll see this all in all these projects through the years and you do with the kids and everything else. And some of them are pain. This one was super, super fun to see it all laid out on the trifold.
Yeah.
You know, Molly's dad's family came over on the Mayflower. And then obviously my mom's family came over after the war in kind of a remarkable fashion as well on a freighter, you know, fleeing the World War II and all everything that happened there. And so, yeah, kind of fun for Titus to learn and talk to the grandparents.
It was fun for you. It didn't seem to be nearly as fun for G, poor guy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when he went through his... Learned a lot more about his family,
tree.
Oh,
kind
yeah.
Kind of shocked him. Shocked to the system.
Well, I think it was fun. He's now Irish.
Here's some Hank Williams for you, Brock.
I say, leave me alone. I'm singing all night long. It's a family tradition.
Right. Yeah. The Cranberries did Ode to My Family. Right.
You're a big Cranberries guy. You went through a phase.
I like the Cranberries, yeah.
Yeah, you went through a phase.
Oh, Dolores Reardon. Great.
Did you ever go through a Tukwila Family Fun Center phase?
I was thinking about Family Fun Center. Yeah. Of course, you got American Family Insurance. Mm-hmm. Let's see. You got the Family Feud, Brock. You like the feud?
I was always uncomfortable with that guy kissing everybody.
Yeah.
What a family crude. Okay. A lot of inappropriate jokes.
Yes, yes there were.
Gene Simmons show.
Was that Family Jewels?
Do you think our guy Charles liked the Family Feud?
Yeah, of course.
I miss Charles. We haven't had Charles for a while.
I know. Talk to Charles, yeah. Well, we need Justin or Maura to take a vacation or something.
Maura, why don't you go to Iowa?
I'm taking one soon.
Yeah, her Iowa friend just came here.
She's going back to Iowa.
Yeah. Of course, you got the heads of the five families, Brock. Corleone family, chief among them. Sure you were. Right up on top of that one.
Shout out to Seattle restaurant Family Friend.
I've heard that place is good.
Yeah, the Smashburger is pretty popular.
Right. Are you ready for a brilliant top five
top
today?
Five?
Top five, because of the sports connection, number five.
We are family. I got all my sisters with me.
A sister sledge, we are family.
We are family.
Official song of the Pirates, of course, that won the World Series back in the day.
Was that Stargell and Company?
Yes.
Really? Yeah.
Yep. I know you're not going to mention it. Taylor and Maura and I are talking about the Family Values Tour.
Oh, yes. Marilyn Manson's.
Biscuits.
Yep.
Corn Taproot.
I forgot that.
That's Marilyn Manson was on some tour with family?
Well, the Family Values Tour.
I went to a Family Values show, but not Marilyn Manson was not there. I was not a fan. And definitely am not now.
I don't remember him being on that tour, but I remember the tour.
Or Brock.
I get Ozfest and that one backwards a lot.
You do? I mean, what's the difference?
Not much.
Right.
It's one of my favorite sounds.
All right, number four from my youth, Brock, yours as well.
What would we do, baby?
Sha-na-na-na. Family Ties, of course, launching the career of Michael J. Fox. Did you love that show as a kid?
I did. I like Nick.
Hey.
I like the boyfriend.
Hey.
Such a simple guy.
Yeah. Came in on his motorcycle, black leather jacket.
Are we in the top five?
What?
Yeah.
This is number four, Family Ties.
Sheesh.
Yes.
Relax.
Man.
Do you think I ever relaxed during this
No,
segment?
You're very uptight. Making me nervous. All right, Family Ties number four. Number three, Brock. Maybe you'd forgotten about this, but...
Driving in my race car. We'll go any place far. So buckle up and we'll go for a ride.
Yep. That's right.
How do you play that guitar?
Oh, yeah.
Parents up in the front
strumming
seat.
That thing.
So talented.
My dog is begging for a treat.
Mm-hmm.
We're all buckled up. up and we're going for a ride.
Did he make this song up?
Why?
Because it's a family road trip. And we're having a good time. It's a grand adventure.
Yeah. This is when Howdy told us that he was doing like children's music and like performing at kids' birthday parties.
That seems like
the fact that we have not played that, the four of us as a family in Arizona, is sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
All right, there you go. Family road trip. That's number three. Number two, Sly and the Family Stone. Next time you have my dad on, you can ask him about how he booked Sly and the Family Stone to play at his college. It's like one of the highlights of his life.
And your bar mitzvah.
They did not play at my bar mitzvah. He said that very confidently, though. Like, you made it sort of sound like bon mi.
Bar mitzvah.
Bar mitzvah.
Bar mitzvah. I thought he played. No?
Sly and the Family Stone? No.
Oh, no. It was Judas Priest.
Yes, Judas Priest, of course, played my bar mitzvah. It was quite a moment. I mean, Gene Simmons might have been the most likely of all that group. For sure. All right, number one, and it's number one for me for a reason, not just for the television show, not just for the many movies, but if you know me, you know that there's one thing I love. It's the Addams Family pinball game.
Oh, yes.
Wake the dead.
Wake the dead. Wake the dead. Out to the cemetery. Come on, everyone.
I've never played this before. How does it go? Did you bring a shovel?
I love that line.
You're right.
Addams Family, number one. Straight to the vaults.
Fantastic. Or
is that your lurch?
You're right.
Yeah, Brock's got a little lurch to him.
Got a little lurch to him.
Yeah, a little lurch.
A little bit.
Anyway, number one, Addams Family. We're going to take off here. Bump and Stacy are coming up next. I see
Come on,
Stacey.
Luis Castillo. She's turn it around.
Jeff Passan will be with us tomorrow morning at 8:30. We'll be in at 6 a.m. Until then, Brock, you know where the hay is?
It's in the barn.
See you, everybody.
This is the chopper!